Welcome to the Philharmonic Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:10 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is March 15th. Well, this has been another tumultuous day on markets, particularly for Japan, where the Nikkei at one point was down over 14%, I think at 16% at one point, and finished out the day down 10.5%. And that's the biggest decline it's had in a number of years, and of course that had a knock-on effect for a number of other markets. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong was down 2.86%, and that had paired its loss. And the A shares in China were also down, but had paired their intraday loss, so really quite considerably by the time it closed. Resources markets have also been hit in here, with the ASX in Australia and the South African market all pulling back sharply. Both of those markets, of course, have a heavy weighting with BHP, which has been under pressure over the last couple of weeks. Elsewhere in Asia, it's not the other Asian markets didn't experience nearly the same degree of selling as the Japanese market. And particularly, some of those food exporting countries, such as Thailand, have taken on a position of relative strength over the last couple of days. Now, they were also down in here today, but not by nearly as much. The Indonesian market, which has been a regional leader, remains within this range in consolidation that it's been in since November. So, mean reversion has occurred for a number of these markets, and they're not showing the kind of weakness that has been characteristic of Japan following this really traumatic event for that economy. Elsewhere in Europe, the majority of indices were down over 2%. The DAX sold off really quite aggressively in the early trading and was down well in excess of 4%. It got right down and touched its 200-day moving average and then rallied really quite emphatically off of that level. It finished down on the day over 3%, but that was substantially above the low. And shares such as BMW and Siemens are probably worth a look. You'll find them in the chart library. They pulled back very sharply. They've completed their mean reversion, went back, found support at the 200-day moving averages, and rallied really quite well off their lows. So a number of these European markets, because of this sharp reaction that we've had over the last couple of days, they've gone down and tested that potential area of support in the region of the 200-day moving average. That doesn't mean that this corrective phase is over, but a number of them have bounced from that level, and that is a positive. Now, they would need to take out today's lows to lend further credence to any kind of bear market hypothesis, and the fact that they are finding support in the region of their 200-day moving averages is a positive from the perspective of the medium-term uptrends. Wall Street also sold off aggressively in the early trading, but it paired that loss really quite substantially, and the Dow Jones and S&P both finished down on the day about 1.1%, the NASDAQ composite just a little bit more, and the Canadian market, which has found support in the region of this 13,500 area, was down a small about half of 1%, which in the context of the major declines that we've seen elsewhere isn't really very much. Same with Mexico, and Brazil was only down a quarter of 1%. In the commodity markets, you had gold down to down 29 at one point, but it finished out the day at 1395, which is a substantial paring of its loss. Silver was down $1.60, and that is the one that had become most overextended relative to its 200-day moving average, and is probably the most likely to encounter some mean reversion. Both platinum and palladium were also weak in here, and that's a pretty similar story for just about all of the industrial commodities. Copper is down to $4.19. Nickel was weaker by $1,100 in here today, and soft commodities were also weak in here today. So corn, soybeans were both limit down. The Arabica coffee down 10 cents, so breaking down from this little range in here, and sugar was also down by 2 full cents on that U.S. traded contract. So that those are substantial downward dynamics, with a number of soft commodities moving down by their limit. And Lest anyone forget, part of the reason that anxiety levels have been so high is that oil prices hit $120 last week or 2 weeks ago on Brent crude. Well, Brent crude was down nearly $5 today. So it's back below $110, having been at 113 yesterday. So the negatives that people are worrying about are leading to a number of positives for the global economy. And if we split those two aspects into two different camps, the negatives are pretty easy to classify, because we've had a succession of negative geopolitical news since the beginning of the year. The first, of course, were higher food prices. And that's been building for a while, and it stemmed from really quite an unfavorable crop season last year. And we've seen a number of these food commodities hitting all-time highs, and that was stoking inflationary pressures, particularly in Asia and Latin America. That was at least one of the catalysts to initiate some of the unrest in the Middle East, and we've had regime change and a fall in supply of crude oil from Libya. And the fact that Gaddafi is currently in the ascendancy in that brief civil war is likely to give a degree of certainty to the oil market when, if this conflagration ends in the short term rather than turning into a long protracted affair, regardless of whether the outcome is favorable from a political perspective or not. And oil prices have surged. Now, on top of that, you've had this quake and tsunami in Japan, which has debilitated the country in the short term. So it's one thing on top of another for investors to worry about, and we've had certainly had a certain degree of deleveraging in here, particularly in the Japanese market. But the majority of other markets are comparatively unaffected at this point. And particularly some of those in Europe, which have already completed now their reversions to the 200-day moving average. Wall Street is still really quite overextended, and the most likely scenario at this point is a range in consolidation, which allows the 200-day moving average to catch up. The fact that Japan has had a terrible hit economically, and there's a risk of recession, and because Japan is the second or third largest economy in the world, a recession in Japan isn't particularly good for the global economy. That has initiated some deleveraging and people taking money off the table generally as they begin to price in a slower rate of GDP growth. That is certainly one of the pressures that is resting on the equity markets, but it's also having a knock-on effect on the commodity markets. So all of the negatives, to a certain extent, can be counterbalanced in here, because two of the things that people were worrying about were high commodity prices, particularly food and oil. Well, the food prices have fallen sharply. They've hit the highs of at least near-term significance and potentially even medium-term significance. So that will be one less thing to worry about. Oil prices have hit at least a near-term high, and the West Texas Intermediate down at $97, below $100 again, is a positive in no uncertain terms for the global economy. Brent crude back below $110, and provided we don't see a countermanding upward dynamic or a further intensification of the unrest in the Middle East, then we can expect a further moderation in oil prices. And again, that is a positive for the global economy. Now, what are the Japanese going to do? They're definitely going to rebuild. That is an unquestionable fact. How are they going to pay for it? Well, Japan has an awful lot of assets held overseas, but if it were to sell those, then That would create a demand for yen and push the currency up even more. And that has got to be the last thing that the Bank of Japan wants at this stage. So quantitative easing remains a viable solution for Japan at this point. And of course, in a capitalist world, that capital will not necessarily stay in Japan, and it will flow to the most attractive assets globally. And the last two rounds of quantitative easing have also helped asset markets globally, and there is no reason to expect that a round of quantitative easing, and this time in Japan, wouldn't have the exact same effect on global assets the next time round. So that is a likely scenario to come out of Japan. That will help to create additional demand for risk type assets. The question is when, and hopefully sooner rather than later, from the perspective. Excuse me. Excuse me. Hopefully sooner rather than later, from the perspective of the Japanese market. But that also means that we're not at the end of this uncertainty. And we haven't had any evidence yet that these markets have found support conclusively. The likelihood is that we're going to have further stimulus from Japan. This pretty much derails the potential that we're going to have interest rate hikes from the Fed or the ECB or the Bank of England in the short term. So that's another thing to worry about that's being removed from the big macro picture. The Middle Eastern, well, particularly the Libyan uprising, is a threat to oil supply, but that is a moderating worry at this point. Food price inflation is probably something that is not going to be as much of a problem in the short to medium term as it could have been. And that would suggest that we're being set up for a buying opportunity in a number of these markets, particularly those that have completed reversions towards their means. If we do get another round of quantitative easing, that would suggest that a number of these markets are going to reassert their medium-term uptrends. Personally, I think the uranium sector is probably offering another bite at the cherry for those that are interested in getting into that market, because the world simply can't do without the amount of energy that nuclear reactors can produce, and particularly in an environment where people are really worried about the amount of carbon that various power stations are producing. The amount of power produced by a nuclear reactor simply can't be replaced by windmills and solar panels at any kind of competitive cost. Not to mention the way that that would benefit manufacturers in China rather than domestic industries. And the fact that we've had such an incredible amount of selling already doesn't mean that it's already over. But we are definitely a step closer to the end, and this isn't the time to be panicking out of positions. We remain in really quite a favorable global economic environment, and we've had two sharp little shocks in the last couple of months, but they're not the kinds of things that are likely to derail the medium-term uptrends that have been in place since late 2008 and early 2009, or the secular bull markets that are evident in Asia and in ex-Japan and in commodity-producing Latin America. But this could create a bit of an interlocution in that regard. So we're waiting for those first big upward dynamics, which will be an indication that demand is regaining the upper hand. And what happens in Japan, particularly at the Bank of Japan, will remain of interest, I suspect, for the short term at the very least. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, but wish all the best to all of you.